Tim Jeffa Kau Tapin M Awef Mu F Taif Sem F Minaminit F Nebit Hayat Nebit Heninit Nebit Jedifuit F Awet F Hasit Semau M Sa
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
In a breathlessness, out of restlessness, by the time I caught up to freedom, I was out of breath. Grandma asked me what I'm running for. I answer, I'm out for the same thing the sun is sunning for. What mother's birth her youngins for. And some say Jesus coming for. For all I know, the earth is spinning slow. Sun's at half mast, cause masses ain't aglow. On bended knee, prostrate before an altered tree. I've made the forest suit me. Tables and chairs, papers and prayers, matter for a spirit. A metal ladder, a wooden cross, a plastic bottle of water, a mandala encased in glass, a spirit encased in flesh. Sound from shaped hollows, the thickest of mucus released from heightened passion. A man that cries in his sleep, a truth that has gone out of fashion, a mode of expression. A paint-splattered wall, a carton of cigarettes, a bouquet of corpses, a dying forest, a nurtured garden, a privatized prison, a candle with a broken wick, a puddle that reflects the sun, a piece of paper with my name on it. I'm surrounded, I surrender all that I am. I have been all I have been has been a long time coming. I am becoming all that I am. The spittle that surrounds the mouthpiece of the flute, unheard yet felt, a gathered wetness, a quiet moisture, sound trapped in a bubble, released into wind. Wind fellows and land merchants, we are history's detergent, water soluble light particles, articles of cleansing breath, articles amending death. These words are not tools of communication, they are shards of metal dropped from 8-story windows. There are waterfalls and gas leaks, aged thoughts rolled in tobacco leaf, the tools of a trade, barter's barred, barred of barters, catchphrases and misunderstandings, but they are not what I feel when I am alone, surrounded by everything and nothing, and there isn't a word, a phrase to be caught, a verse to be recited, a mantra to fill my being in those moments. I am a blankness, the contained center of an O, the pyramidic containment of an A. I stand in the middle of all that I have learned, all that I have memorized, all that I have known by heart, unable to reach any of it. There is no sadness, there is no bliss, it is a forgotten memory, a memorable escape route that only is found by not looking. There, in the spine of the dictionary, the words are worthless. They are a mere weight pressing against my thoughtlessness. But then, who else can speak of thoughtlessness with such confidence? Who else has learned to sling these ancient ideas like dead rats held by their tails so as not to infect this newly oiled skin? I can think of nothing heavier than an airplane. I can think of no greater conglomerate of steel and metal. I can think of nothing less likely to fly. There are no wings more weighted. I too have felt a heaviness, the stare of a man guessing at my being. Yes, I am homeless, a homeless man making offerings to the after future, sculpting rubber tree forests out of worn tires and shoe soles. A nation unified in exhale, a cloud of smoke, a native pipe ceremony, all the gathered cigarette butts piled in heaps, snow-covered mountains, lipstick smeared and shriveled, offerings to an afterworld, tattoo guns and plastic wrappers, broken zippers and dead-eyed dolls. It's all overwhelming me, oak and elming me. I have seeded a forest of myself, little books from tall trees. It matters not what this paper be made of. Give me notebooks made of human flesh, dried on steel hooks and nooses. Make uses of use, uses of us. It's all overwhelming me, oak and elming me. I've seeded a forest of myself, little books from tall trees. On bended knee, prostrate before an altar tree. I've made the forest suit me. Tables and chairs, papers and prayers, matter verse spirit. Through meditation I program my heart to beat break beats and hum bass lines on exhalation.
Now, research has revealed the impact that climate change is having on the way the Earth spins. Scientists measured what they call polar motion, which is the way the Earth moves in position on its axis. Now, the direction of that move has started to shift because melting ice at the poles is changing how weight is distributed on the Earth. Well, after moving towards Canada for much of the 20th century, the direction of polar motion is now east, heading towards the UK.
Energy events across the solar system frequently happen along or near the 19.47 meridian, which is the base of the inverted tetrahedron in the Earth's sphere. The pyramid system at Teotihuacan in Mexico lies on this meridian, as does one of the most active volcanoes on Earth. Kilauea in Hawaii has been erupting continuously for the last 19 years and shows no sign of stopping. The largest volcano in our solar system is located on Mars, and it too is located in this vicinity. The well-documented red spot on Jupiter, a large vortex-like storm larger than the Earth, is also stabilized near this critical 19.47 latitude.
But here is the discovery that we made, and this is just simply amazing. What I did was, came over here to the Pyramid of the Sun in Teotihuacan, Mexico, from which one of the lines of death emanates from. And this is what we found. As you are aware, the Pyramid of the Sun falls at 19.47 degrees north parallel. And you can look this up on Wikipedia, but also I'm going to show you as soon as Google Earth helps us arrive at the location. But this proves, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that there was advanced technology in Teotihuacan, Mexico, during the building of this pyramid, the ability to see across entire continents for near-perfect alignment, even factoring in tectonic shifting. Now, here, of course, is the coordinates down here. It says 19 and 41 minutes and 663 seconds, but that equates out to 19.47 degrees, which, by the way, is a galactic law that you never hear about in science. The sunspot on Jupiter is at 19.47 degrees. The Mars Pathfinder landed at 19.47 degrees. We have 1947, Roswell, New Mexico. We also have most of the major sunspot activity at 19.47 degrees. We also have Teotihuacan, Mexico at 19.47 degrees. Now, I want you to look at the line measure here that I did from this direction down. This line here is the 188th parallel, which comes within feet of Stonehenge, literally. And look at the degrees. 219.47. So, this discovery has not been made yet, but they encoded their northern latitude from the equator into the building of this pyramid because it lines up with Stonehenge. And of course, we understand the death and destruction that falls along this line.
Thank you. gravitation of matter sets up an 11-dimensional scalar wave in hyperspace. The scalar wave has a rising, falling, or steady base frequency. The hyperdimensional energy is converted to heat at the focal points of the fifth-dimensional tetrahedral flex wave at one of the three tetrahedral slash sphere intersection points. These points are located at 19.5 away from either north or south axis of rotation. The focal points result in hot spots of the planet's surface that can lead to island building in a planet's oceans or volcanic activity on its landmass. Gas giants tend to form large, powerful storms over these hot spots. There are three important factors to remembering when dealing with planets: hyperdimensional stress, hyperdimensional inertia, and hyperdimensional base frequency. That is awesome. Just keep that in mind. You know, like, that's what I'm talking about. That's just real. That's hyperdimensional physics right there. It is out of this world, literally, like, just on another dimension, I think, right?
In the summer of 1994, while living in the mountains of Western Canada, Haramain, after months of following the developments of the Shoemaker-Levy comet, decided to pack his small personal telescope onto his rucksack and scale the closest, highest peak so that he may observe the comet colliding with the surface of Jupiter. Weeks prior to the event, the media, reporting from the astrophysical community, stated that none of the impacts would be visible to the amateur observer, and that these impacts may even be difficult for the high-powered telescopes to observe. Haramain, however, disagreed. To him, the impact of these high-velocity objects composed of H2O provided all the chemistry necessary for a fiery show, and Haramain was not about to miss it. Setting on the summit of Mount Wedge, Haramain, night after night, witnessed the awesome and spectacular event. In some cases, flames the size of Canada emerged from the impact coordinates, leaving behind enormous black depressions, visible even with weak telescopic capacity.
So one of those nights, I was on the summit, and it was just a magical moment. On one side, I had low cloud coverage over the peaks that were below me, and I could see the lightning lighting up those clouds. And on the other side, I had the sun setting, and the moon was rising, and it was just the most clear night. And I was looking at Jupiter through my telescope, and I started to think of the surface feature of Jupiter and that huge red spot, almost 1.5 times the size of the Earth, on Jupiter that constantly, steadily stays at the same latitude. And I thought, what about that dynamic? Is that staying there for some particular reason? What is forcing that huge vortex of Coriolis dynamics to stay at that latitude all the time? You'd expect that it would dissipate eventually, you'd expect that it would move in latitude, go all over the place, but it doesn't. And I thought, what if that structure on the surface of Jupiter is staying there because of the dynamics of the structure of the vacuum, the tetrahedron inside the sphere dictating that energy event to happen at that particular spot on Jupiter?
Upon his return, Haramain began to investigate. He found that not only did the red spot on Jupiter orbit very close to the magical 19.47 latitude of the tetrahedron inscribed in a sphere, but that many other planets exhibited similar dynamics. Haramain was not the only one to have noted this phenomenon. At the time, Richard C. Hoagland, former science consultant to Walter Cronkite, CBS News, CNN, and NASA, had come to conclude that some hyperdimensional tetrahedral dynamics had to be at play in planetary structures. He noted that not only did the red spot on Jupiter exhibit the appropriate geometric latitude, but that many other planetary energy events were consistent with this geometry. The largest volcano in our solar system, Olympus Mons on Mars, is situated near 19.47 north latitude. Hoagland used this perspective as well to predict energy phenomena at specific latitudes on other planets that were later confirmed by NASA's probe photographs.
So I applied the same geometry to the Earth, and I realized that if you put a tetrahedron inside the Earth so that one point is at the South Pole and the other points are at 19.47 latitude on the surface of the Earth in the North Hemisphere. And I looked around to see what was there, and sure enough, I found the most active volcanoes on Earth, the Hawaiian volcanoes, exactly at that latitude. And then I went along that latitude and I found the city of Titeunacan, north of Mexico City, to be at that latitude as well, which is quite remarkable. As we saw in the presentation, the mathematics of that city were decoded by Hugh Hollison Jr. to describe the dynamics of a sphere with a tetrahedron in it. And so not only does the city have these mathematics in it, but the city itself on the surface of the Earth is at that latitude that demarked the relationship of a tetrahedron and a sphere. Remarkable.
However, Haramain's model predicted a 64 cube octahedron structure as the dynamics of the vacuum, and thus he wondered if they could be even clearer resolutions of the other intermediary angles produced by this more complex geometry. If so, it would give observational evidence that the structure of the vacuum is a result of the more complex array of an octahedron-tetrahedron matrix. Haramain looked at the bands of both Jupiter and Saturn and was amazed to find how closely these bands obey the angle relationship of the 64 tetrahedron grid. Furthermore, the recent data returned by the Cassini probe confirmed the presence of an enormous hexagonal feature on the north pole of Saturn, first imaged almost 27 years ago and still persistent to this day. The hexagonal structure, which is completely unexpected in standard models, not only obeyed the latitude dictated by the 64 tetrahedron grid, but is fundamental to the geometry of the cube octahedron at the center of Haramain's conceptual model and mathematics. Even more compelling is the recent imaging returned by the same probe of the south pole of Saturn, which in this case portrays an enormous vortex that seemed to be absorbing matter in a whirlpool. The south pole vortex leads to the center of the planet, as would the double torus dynamic resulting from the structure of the vacuum, as Haramain's model would predict. Our local star, the Sun, is no exception to this phenomenon. Hot bands of high-energy plasma and intense sunspot activity are found to stabilize at approximately 19.47 degrees latitude north and south.
As we arise from out of the primordial waters of chaos, as Amun-Ra, the sun god, emerged from the lotus flower, I invoke the ancient Egyptian deity Shu Ra, inheriting the vibrational force of Tefnut in the hermetic form of Yin. We manifest as the nine and Ad, embrace the face of the Sphinx, and behold a mystic triad of Ad-Tur-Re. Three of us initiated from the majestic temple of Karnak, where the opening of the mouth ceremony is performed. With the Uraeus, the crown of the sacred cobras, will be placed upon my forehead. In the valley of the kings, I walk as Inhotep, descendant of Ramses the second. I cast the incantation, the curse of King Tut, and watch the scattered beetles eat away at your flesh. So witness the splendor of Luxor as I summon the Nitiru Zuzor, while performing the great oracle of Tahuti. I call forth Rahuru, Kahuti, and the field of offering will be drank from the battles within the center face of the great pyramids of Giza. I possess the spirit of my ancient ancestors, Osiris. Through the perception of my iris, I perceive Horus as the apparition of Isis. My soul wasn't placed inside a solid gold sarcophagus, and then imprinted upon my chest was the arm, the key to the afterlife, where my soul will seek eternal life.
For over 2,000 years, ancient Egyptians believed that their dead set sail on a sacred journey to a wondrous afterlife.
Learn hieroglyphics, not just pictures, but a celestial linguistic not related to a specific terrestrial distance. Ancient Egyptian civilization came from Mars, all people equal to that of Elijah, the guides to make the pilgrimage to the mountain of Sinai, where the spine eye watches as the prophets speak Nawapic in the temple of Amun-Ra. Nine astronomers grab the formula for the Southern Cross, all rise from the dark side with our laws. Orchids provide the planet with organic life, holding a skull of bee bliss in the background with Egypt's sun eclipse. Poltergeist close to Christ, the solid Apollon question me, deep on the left of me, dagger through my chest place, but I escape just like a gardener in an upper room. 10 peasants, 2 not present, Mary Magdalene sprinkling all on my abdomen, fill my wounds, empty tomb, presume I was on a bus. Drop your
fishing rod. Bait the weak who hate to speak of love. Came to my own, but they received me not when my CD dropped. They came even with the Sanhedrin baptized in the Jordan, recording John's last sermon. His accent was sort of German. Told the slave driver, the table's turning on the grave robber. Hey Nicodemus, drop your idolatry and follow me. Drop your net, catch the catfish while he backflip. Don't hold him captive, drop him. When the tide changed, that I was rendered. I have not ascended yet, I returned to Jerusalem. Walking with Methuselah, the arrival of Shiloh. Passing up the scepter, healing up the lepers. I came to the lost sheep, the tossed beast for them the right tool. Primitive but not limited to 16 balls in a sun cycle. Michael transformed to Yannon from the lagoon in the galaxy phrase Ilyun. Soon as June 26th, the mummy knits a new grave, a paved in jade, a curse for those who impose.
Egyptian religion warns all who dare defile the tomb of mighty Pharaoh. He who shall injure my tomb, the sun god shall punish him.
The iris, Osiris, I walk amongst the fires, relentless to the ancient land of Memphis, carrying the sacred capstone on 40 arms. I'm greeted by a group of master masons, silk adorned, who wore the charms of Horus, the Avenger. I said I am a messenger from Netaru. Are you prepared for what I bear to you? They jested to the east, the shackles were released. I heard the moans of the beast. It was then that the granite was implanted with the positive chi energy. The slope became slanted on the angle equal to the distance that the sun's light must travel, unraveling the linens of nine kings and women, hence the beginning of the obelisk, raising ritual, science of tachyon force, habitual but lost, when the last piece of brick was tossed, the first Roman script embossed on the column base, the first emperor defiled and defaced the sarcophagus face, they couldn't imitate, so they had to replace, benevolent Egyptian magic with a malevolent race.
Know how to preface this. I'm just gonna say it. They're rebuilding the arch to the Temple of Baal, and they're gonna erect that in Times Square in New York City and also in Trafalgar Square in London next month. So this if you're not familiar with what the Temple of Baal is, this is a place where in ancient times there was ritualistic Baal worship, where they would sacrifice children and have giant orgies for fertility rituals to Baal. It says in some it looked a little bit like this. Adults would gather around the altar of Baal. Infants would then be burned alive as a sacrificial offering to the deity. Amid horrific screams and the stench of charred human flesh, congregants, men and women alike, would engage in bisexual orgies. The ritual of convenience was intended to produce economic prosperity by prompting Baal to bring rain for the fertility of Mother Earth. Apparently what happened was Isis bulldozed this place. And so because Isis destroyed it and it's a cultural heritage site, they're going to digitally recreate life-size replicas of this 50-foot arch to the temple of this, and they're going to start erecting them. And actually, it's not even just going to be in Times Square or in London. They want to do this in 1,000 different places all over the world. So 1,000 Temple of Baal archways are going to be erected in major cities all over the globe. I mean, what do you say about something like this? Okay, and the justification for this is ISIS has bulldozed such an important cultural heritage site. Do you know how many churches ISIS has destroyed? Do you see them erecting churches everywhere? Do you see that happening? No, you don't. Actually, they even talk about in here how they also destroyed a 1,500-year-old monastery, but it was modest and unadorned structure that had none of the glamour of the Temple of Baal. So they won't be bringing that to any major Western cities anytime soon, because it's just not glamorous enough, I guess. But Temple of Baal, not only will they make it, but they're going to go ahead and make it and put it in 1,000 cities all over the globe. So that's what it says right here. The Institute plans to construct approximately 1,000 such versions of the arch in cities throughout the world. This is the website for the place that's doing it, the Institute for Digital Archaeology. They're working with Oxford, they're working with Harvard, and they're working with UNESCO. So that's probably a really big surprise to most of you, UNESCO. But they actually have the first one here. It says countdown coming to Trafalgar Square. And they actually have a 25-day, it's at 25 days right now, a countdown to when they put it up. So you don't have to believe in this, by the way. You don't have to believe in this stuff, and you can say it's all hokey and whatever. But just, again, realize the people who are doing this, and they're doing it all over the globe right now, they believe in it, okay? Obviously. Why else would they be doing it? Temple of Baal arches going up all over the world. I guess the guys at Bohemian Grove won't have to go all the way to Bohemian Grove anymore to do the cremation of care. They can just go right down to Times Square, which will save them quite the trip. I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to say, you guys.
And if I say to you tomorrow, take my hand, child, come with me. It's to a castle I will take you. Where what's to be, they say, will be.
I guess the wind says, fin, sail away, leave the day way high in the sky. And low, but the wind won't blow. We really shouldn't go, we only know to show. Say to me tomorrow, oh, what fun it all would be. Then what's to stop us, pretty baby? But what is and what should never be?
I catch the wind, see it spin, sail away, leave the day way up high.
Thank you. This is called the Dolly Zoom effect, and the optics that make it possible are also responsible for what's called the Moon Terminator illusion. A terminator is the line between an illuminated and dark side. Light arrives perpendicular to the terminator, but it doesn't always appear to. Maybe you've noticed this before. When the moon and the sun are up at the same time and a good distance apart in the sky, the direction the moon is being lit from won't always appear to line up with the position of the sun. What's going on here? The answer lies in visual angles. The further away from you something is, the smaller it will appear to be. In psychophysical terms, its visual angle shrinks, the angle within your field of view that it stretches across. Now, this means that everything we look at is foreshortened, that is, it diminishes in size towards the horizon line, a line infinitely far away. Things that far away are foreshortened to the point at which they have no height whatsoever. This distortion affects everything that we look at, but it doesn't confuse us because our brains know about it. We can look at an object that is foreshortened and figure out what it probably actually looks like. For example, a door is a rectangle, but it's wrecked by foreshortening when opened. Closer distances appear larger. The whole shape is different. But your brain isn't freaked out every time a door opens because it understands that different sensations don't necessarily mean different actual things. It's called subjective constancy. Our brains cleverly factor in previous experiences and perspective clues from the surrounding world to calculate in real time whether changes in what we sense are because of actual changes in the things we're looking at, or are just merely products of their positions or the surroundings. For example, I, right now on this video screen, am vulnerable to foreshortening, but I probably look okay to you. However, if we frame in really closely and remove surrounding perspective clues, I can be made to look weird, strange, a little scary, distended. I'm foreshortened without the necessary tools around me for you to mentally adjust. This is probably the crux of the Moon Terminator illusion. Take a look at this. The line where that wall meets the ceiling is a straight line. Seriously, take a look. If you look to the left and right, it continues to look straight. And trust me, this building was built with level, straight ceilings. But that's not what your eye senses. A camera will help demonstrate this. It doesn't add in the post-sensation processing that our brains do, and we can also frame in to remove other clues telling us what to think. Now, sure enough, right in front of us, the line is level with the screen of the camera. It's a straight line. But if we move our eyes across the line, look what happens. If I pan this way, the slope changes, and now the line appears to be going up and to the left. And if I pan this way, the line appears to be moving up and to the right. What's going on here? A straight line can't have changing slope. That's what a curved line does. Just like the curve we think we see between the sun and the moon. But wait, if the line between the sun and the moon is curved because of foreshortening, why don't we see lines like this one as curves? Well, here's a clue. Clues. We know what rooms are supposed to look like. We know how they're built. We have experience with them. And there are other things in the environment helping us. But when you look at the sky, there's not much to help you. In the absence of clues about distance and perspective, our brains assume that whatever we're looking at is equidistant from us, making the sky a sort of dome surface, like a planetarium screen. The only clue we have then is the horizon, but it's a red herring, because the horizon doesn't foreshorten. It's just a place where, due to foreshortening, everything becomes infinitely flat. Brian Rogers and Olga Naumenko demonstrated that these things result in the Terminator illusion by using a planetarium. They projected two dots onto its dome, mimicking our perception of the sun and the moon. They then asked participants to place a third dot on the straight line connecting them.
but just as in the Moon Terminator illusion, people incorrectly placed the third dot. They were influenced by a desire to stay parallel to the horizon, as if it was subject to the same foreshortening rules. Our brains also often fail to factor in foreshortening when it comes to crepuscular rays, light beams streaming through gaps in clouds. They appear to converge from a common point, as if the sun is only a few thousand meters above Earth. But of course, in fact, the sun is extremely far away, and these lines are actually pretty much exactly parallel. It's true. They look like they converge for the same reason railroad tracks appear to converge. The visual angle of the distance separating them shrinks the further down you look. Sometimes our brains do the opposite. They assume and consider foreshortening even when it isn't really there. Like in this illusion, where the cars seem to be different sizes, but in actuality on the page are all the same size. Everything else in the image is affected by foreshortening, so our brains assume that the cars are too, and decide that in order for them all to have the same visual angle, which they do, the more distant ones must be literally larger in real life. The rate at which the visual angle of something you are looking at changes as you move toward it or away from it is not constant. In order to cut the visual angle of an object in half, its distance from you must double. That means objects really, really far away require a lot more movement to have their visual angle changed compared to nearer objects. This is called parallax, and it's a major reason moving allows us to learn so much about depth. It's why stuff on the side of the road whizzes by you as you drive past, while distant features of the landscape appear to only crawl past. A really distant thing, like, say, the moon, 384,000 kilometers away, appears to move so little as you do, it can seem to be following you. It's not, of course, it's just geometry. For the same reasons, moving a camera through space will affect the visual angle of nearer things, like the Vsauce mug here, much more dramatically than distant things, like Jake Chudnow's album Against the Wall. It is barely changing size as we move back and forth. But unlike moving, zooming increases the visual angle of everything equally, regardless of depth. Notice that when zooming, the distant album grows and shrinks right along with the mug. Now, if you move in while zooming out, or vice versa, the zoom will be most apparent when looking at distant things, while the move more apparent on near things. The result can be trippy. Here, I've been placed where both effects cancel each other out, so everything around me changes instead. Another great illusion that takes advantage of parallax is the popular star field or hallway illusion. Cover the middle of the video and you'll appear to be moving much faster, but if you cover the edges, you'll appear to be moving much slower. All you're doing is altering the perspective clues your brain receives about movement. The nearer stuff at the edge changes position faster than the distant stuff way ahead. So if you cover the slow distant stuff, your brain only has the faster moving stuff to judge speed from. But cover the faster near stuff, and the slower stuff becomes the new near. Your brain assumes that you've slowed down. The optics and mathematics behind all of these effects were understood at least thousands of years ago. During the Renaissance, artists used that knowledge to produce paintings that imitated reality really well. I mean, the perspective is quite realistic. But the Renaissance? Why did it take so long for us to get there? I mean, look at this pre-Renaissance painting. What the heck is going on here? The perspective is all wrong. That's not at all what such a scene would actually look like. Artists and viewers contemporary to works like that saw the world just like we do. They saw foreshortening. They couldn't help but see it. Foreshortening is right there in plain sight. No, foreshortening is plain sight. So, what gives? Were medieval artists all just a bunch of five-year-olds? No. No, in the sense that the question is wrong. Realistic-looking perspective was used way before the Renaissance. Now, it might not have always been mathematically formal perspective, but foreshortening was understood. Western art went from this to this, not because humans all of a sudden became smarter, but because of a difference in desire. What to us today might look unrealistic and thus bad was, in its time, deliberate and popular. The shift to imitating the world mathematically, as if seen through a window, was more about cultural interests in objectivity and the individual than it was about artists all of a sudden becoming smarter. Furthermore, perspective illusions show us that what we think we see isn't always what we're seeing. A child's drawing may seem crude in terms of objective mathematical imitation, but there are other things about the world and our experience of it worth imitating. Teasing out the less plainly obvious to show something personal is sometimes even harder than following perspective grids. Picasso put it this way, "It took me 4 years to learn to paint like Raphael, but a lifetime to learn to paint like a child."
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Well, my nose keeps on bleeding, cause it's reader I'm needing. I better call out a meeting of the boys. Of the boys. My friends are all dying, and death can't be lying. It's the truth, and it don't make a noise. I would move you with the beat of a drum. And this picture is proof that although you're aloof, you have the shiniest tooth beneath the sun. Easy come, easy go, be the star of the show. I'm giving up all I know to get more. Photograph the picture, young grunt pin up scripture, Foot Locker tagged memories of war. A mirage, this garage, and the photo montage, and the finger massage from the host. Good Lord, good Lord, the one I adore that I cannot afford is a ghost. Is a ghost. Proto-soul shows the word, and the word is the bird that flew through in the snow. In the snow. Lemonade me, then grade me, then deliver my baby. And if my friends all persuade me, I'll go. Thank you. me, Rita. Don't you know I'm a bleeder? And I promised I wouldn't lead her on. But she read me, then led me, and I ate what was fed me till I purged every word in this song.
Now, go find the others.com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.